Good morning. I was looking at the duty list for this month, and I was like, "Oh, hey, there I am, down to preach again." So that was always. I like having the chance to get up here, and I'm glad that I'm at a congregation where I get to do that. And it's good to be here, and it's good to see all of you this morning too. I'm glad that there's so many people here. We have visitors, and that's great as well. It's good to see old friends again, and all that. So one thing about every time you get up here, I think one of the hardest things is deciding, well, hey, what am I going to talk about? So about a month ago when I noticed I was going to preach, I started thinking about that. And I was like, well, what about this idea or this idea or this idea? And I wasn't really sure what I was going to do. And then something like hit me. And that's that this is probably the last time that I'm going to get to come up here and preach. Because I'm starting a job in January out in the West Coast. And so I was like, wow, then it's sort of even bigger. It's like, what's like my final parting message that I want to leave Westside with? And actually that made it easier. When I thought about it from that sense, I knew what I wanted to talk about. So in doing this, I was reflecting over the last 6 years that I've been here and just sort of all the things that have happened at Westside, how much of the congregation here has changed, and just a lot has happened. And I realized one thing that I think has really impressed me about Westside and about what has made me feel so blessed to be able to be here is that this is a congregation where everybody works. Everyone is active. Like everyone here is a part of the work going on, and you see that, you can feel that. And so that's what I'm going to talk about today, basically, is having a mind to work. And that's something I think we've done really well at this over the last 6 years. And I want to look at how we can do better, how we can keep doing what we're doing well, and how we can continue to grow. And so we're going to look at a lot of examples in the Bible of people who, I guess I would say, had a mind to work. And I'm going to focus on sort of what you might call like grassroots efforts, like things that sort of, they didn't have someone up on high say, oh, do this now, you do this, and you do that. But more just like people had this idea, like, hey, here's something I can do, and I'm going to do it. There's no one stopping me. There's no reason I can't do it. This is a need that I'm able to meet. Let's do it. So we're going to look at some examples from the Old Testament, from the New Testament, and then focus a little more, focused on Westside. So with that, let's go ahead and get into this. Our examples in the Old Testament. This will come up. There it goes. Sometimes it kind of takes a little while to catch up. But so I guess there's three that we're going to look at in the Old Testament where, at least that I saw, and I'm sure there's plenty more. These are just three that I want to focus on this morning. The first one was when they were building the tabernacle. And this is a passage I like a lot. I've read it a lot in contribution talks and so on. But if you turn over to Exodus in chapter 36, and this is after we've read about them finally being delivered from Egypt, getting everything together, getting this revelation from God about the law, hearing all these details about the tabernacle, and then actually going to build it. And I'll read the first seven verses there of Exodus 36. It says, Bezalel and Aholiab and every craftsman in whom the Lord had put skill and intelligence to know how to do any work in the construction of the sanctuary shall work in accordance with all that the Lord has commanded. And Moses called Bezalel and Aholiab and every craftsman in whose mind the Lord had put skill, everyone whose heart stirred him up to come and to do the work. And they received from Moses all the contributions that the people of Israel had brought for doing the work on the sanctuary. They still kept bringing him freewill offerings every morning, so that all the craftsmen who were doing every sort of task on the sanctuary came, each from the task that he was doing, and said to Moses, "The people bring much more than enough for doing the work that the Lord has commanded us to do." And so Moses commanded, and the word was proclaimed throughout the camp, "Let no man or woman do anything more for the contribution for the sanctuary." So the people were restrained from bringing. Or for the material that they had was sufficient to do all the work and more. And this is sort of, obviously they were commanded to do this. They were commanded to build the tabernacle. But there's a couple of phrases in here that I think is really cool, how we have Israel gathering together and participating in this. One is in verse 2, in the phrase that says, and everyone whose heart stirred him up to come do the work. So it sounds like more than just these chief craftsmen, there were plenty of people who also felt moved to come and participate. And even the ones who maybe weren't able to do this craft work, they still helped with free will offerings. They brought what they could to help build the temple. And so much so that they had to be told to stop. It's, you know, that's just kind of amazing. It's like the craftsmen are out there building, and they're like, whoa, stop. Like, quit bringing the stuff here. We don't know what to do with. We have more than enough to do the work that we were supposed to do. And, you know, you've done well enough. And I feel like that's sort of a good problem when people are working so hard that you have to tell them to stop working so hard. We see a similar mindset then with as we've been studying recently with the captives coming back out of captivity and sort of resettling the land of Israel. This passage in Nehemiah 4:6, I'll just sort of paraphrase it. Nehemiah says that we built the wall because the people had a mind to work. And if you look at how long it took them to build the wall, it was 52 days, which seems pretty fast to me. Last summer, I decided I was going to build myself a bookshelf. And I was like, oh, yeah, this will be easy. It's like a weekend project. You know, you just get some wood, you cut it, you put it together, you know, it'll be fine. It took me till February to finish it. It was a good 6 months to do it. So if Israel can build a wall in 52 days, that's good. They had more of a mind to work than I did on this particular bookshelf that I started. And that's great. The people had a mind to work. They were all participating, and I get the sense that they were all just sort of finding places that they could help out and doing what they could. It wasn't like you had some big chief architect saying, like, you know, we have this brick here and this one cut this way. It was just sort of, they built something and it worked. And then the last one that I've got under the Old Testament is still is the same time period. The captives are returning, and we have back in Persia, we've got Esther. And I'll go ahead and just reread this passage here, Esther chapter 4, 12 through 17. Let's turn there. And so this is just after Haman had this plot against the Jews. He said today that he's going to annihilate them all, and you know, Mordecai's found out about this, and this is bad news. And so starting then in verse 12, it says, "And they told Mordecai what Esther had said. The Mordecai told them to reply, 'Do not think to yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise from the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this.' Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, 'Go gather all the Jews to be found in Susa and hold a fast on my behalf, and do not eat or drink for 3 days, night and day. I and my young women will also fast as you do. Then I will go to the king, although it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish.' Mordecai then went away and did everything as Esther had ordered him." And this is, you know, many of us, I think, will probably not become queen. I actually would go so far as to say none of us will become queen. It's just there aren't a whole lot of queens nowadays. So, you know, maybe we can't participate in the way that Esther did. But the point was, Esther was in this position where she was uniquely able to do something to help God's cause. And she did it. We just sort of finished studying the rest of this, and we know how that all worked out. But I think this also took everybody. Yeah, Esther was the queen, and she was sort of in this unique position to do it. But it took Mordecai to point out to her, hey, this is something you can do, and it's something you need to do. You're not going to escape this, you know, if you don't do anything about it. And then the way that Esther enlisted the help of all of Israel, and proclaimed a fast and said, you know, pray for me, help me to do this. And so they were all working together in this, even though, you know, maybe not everyone could do what Esther was able to do. Maybe all the people could do is fast, but yet that was something that helped. That was a way in which they had a mind to work and participated in this. And, you know, their contribution was helpful as well. And now let's go on to the New Testament. I found a lot more in here, and I think there's just even more of them. And I think maybe that's somewhat the difference between the Old and the New Testament. The Old Testament's looking a lot more at the history of Israel as sort of a nation, and so we spend a lot more time talking about the leaders, where in the New Testament, I think we see a lot more of individuals. So a bunch of examples here that we had, I think, about six of them. And so the first one I've got is the Samaritan woman. So this was over in John. And I'm probably not going to read all of that because that's why I wrote down 30 verses up there. So that would take us a while. But just to talk about sort of what happened here, Jesus was waiting by this well, and his disciples had gone off into the city, and this woman came up, and he asked her to give him a drink of water, and she's like, well, you know, I'm a Samaritan. Why are you even talking to me? You're a Jew. Jews don't have anything to do with Samaritans, and, you know, they talk some more, and she realizes Jesus is a prophet, and I think this is sort of cool that the very first thing she did then is asked about this, like, this doctrinal question that I assume she had just been wrestling, you know, where should we worship? You know, I hear from you Jews that we're supposed to go down to Jerusalem, but our fathers up here in Samaria say we're supposed to worship in this one. And that was clearly important to her, because as soon as she had someone to answer it, she could do it. But then after that, at the end of this all, I think in about verse 28 or so, read verse 29. So this is after the woman left. She takes her jar of water and goes away back into the town. And she says to the people, come see a man who told me all that I ever did. Can this be the Christ? And that's a small thing. But Jesus made an impression on her, and she told people about it. Said, hey, come and see this. And that's, you know, a small thing that we can do as well. I had a hard time coming up with a good way to phrase this, but in Luke, there's a story about these people who had been casting out demons, and it's just two verses there. I will honestly probably tell you about what happens before I even manage to flip over there, but so in Luke chapter 9, and then verse 49 and 50, says, John answered, Master, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we tried to stop him because he does not follow with us. But Jesus said to him, do not stop him, for the one who is not against you is for you. And this is, you know, maybe a little bit different, but I think what I see in this is that there are people out there who, for whatever reason, had the ability to cast out demons, and they were doing it. They realized, hey, this is something that we can do. This needs done. Let's do it. And the disciples tried to stop them. They're like, oh, you can't do this. You're not following along with us. You're not part of our group or whatever. And Jesus said, no, don't. They're doing this good thing. Let them keep doing that. It doesn't really matter whether they're associated with us or not. The fact is, this is a thing that needs done, and they're doing it, and let's support that. Let's not get in the way of that. Let's let them keep doing their work. And so that's, I think, an example of where we can, you know, it doesn't really matter who we are, where we are, what we are, or who told us to do this, whatever. We can, if there's something we can do it, and we should do it, just like these people were doing here. Joseph of Arimathea is one of them. So he's a really cool story to me, because you see him develop over the course of the Gospels, and sort of the culmination of his development is here in Luke chapter 23. And this is after Jesus has been crucified. He's now dead on the cross, and Joseph's the one that takes care of the burial. And 50. Okay, I was like, yeah. Okay. So in Luke chapter 23 and verse 50, it says, now there was a man named Joseph from the Jewish town of Arimathea. He was a member of the council, a good and righteous man who had not consented to their decision and action, and he was looking for the kingdom of God. This man went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then he took it down and wrapped it in a linen shroud and laid him in a tomb cut in stone, which no one had ever yet been laid. I'll just stop there. So, and this is, I think, maybe in some ways more kind of like Esther, in that Joseph was in a position of power. He was part of the council. He had been there in the group that made the decision to crucify Jesus, although it says he made that decision. You know, I imagine voiced his disagreement with it or tried to defend Jesus in that. But here he has this thing he can do, which is to bury Jesus. He was in a position where he'd go to Pilate and ask for the body, and where Pilate would ask or would, you know, respond to that. And he had the means to provide a proper burial. It wasn't like anyone told him, Joseph, you need to do this. This is, you're commanded to do this. It was a thing that he could do and that he wanted to do. And I imagine he would have had to expend some political capital in doing this. You know, he was in a pretty prized position, I think, in the council there. And he's making it clear where he stands in relation to them as far as Jesus is concerned. And, you know, so that was him having something he could do, and he went out and he did it. The disciples who scattered around, after the persecution had arisen against them. So in Acts chapter 7, we had just read about Stephen and his address to the people there. And as a result of that, they stoned him. And furthermore, this persecution arose up against the Jews. We see Saul going and persecuting all the Christians. Just, it says, like, going house from house and ravaging them and taking them off to prison and so on. And so the people flee. They run away and they're like, we need to get out of here. This isn't safe. Let's go. But then in verse 4 of Acts chapter 8, it said, now those who were scattered went about preaching the word. And yeah, so even though they, because of their belief in Jesus, they had been, they were facing this persecution, their lives were in danger, there's this threat against them, it still says that they went out preaching the word. And you can imagine that the temptation would sort of be to be really quiet. You know, maybe imagine if you were a Jew in World War II Germany, with Hitler out there rounding them all up and annihilating them, basically. Imagine them fleeing and then trying to also convert people to Judaism while they're doing that. That's, that would put them at a lot of, it seems like that they did that here, and yet the people were still sharing why it was. And I imagine this was not like they were standing up necessarily in the town being like, let me proclaim to you Jesus. Maybe Philip was doing more of that kind of thing, but I think a lot of them were just sort of like, anytime, you have someone new moves in the town and you're like, where are you from? What brings you here? Why, the sorts of questions that you ask when we see a visitor. I imagine it's like, oh yeah, we, there was some trouble that rose up in Jerusalem. We fled and here, let me tell you about Jesus, this person who has caused us to do these things, basically. And probably just sort of slipped it in the conversation. And that's, because of this, the church grew. It was the more and more they tried to stamp it out, the more it grew. And I think that's a lot, this is something that we can do too. I think about some of the activities I'm involved in outside of church, whether I'm sure a lot of you have heard me talk about, say, the 3D printing club or about various games I'm playing, like people that I try to invite to play Ingress on my phone, any of these things. And basically what I am is an evangelist for these things. And I'm surprised at how often I'm out talking with friends and being like, oh, here, look at this thing I'm doing. It's really cool. Or maybe some TV show that I'm watching or some new music that I found or whatever. And for whatever reason, those things are easy for me to share with people and say, hey, this is really cool. You should try it too. And I think that we should try to do the same thing with the gospel. It should be, it's an important thing to us. It's an exciting thing to us. Certainly the relationships that I have with all of you here mean a lot to me. And these are things that we can share the same way that these disciples in the early church, they were doing that as well, even under threat of persecution. I have the Macedonians up here, and so these are, again, another passage that I read a lot for contribution talks. So this is 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Paul's talking about, they're taking up this collection to send it to Jerusalem, and then he talks about those in Macedonia who were just so eager in their giving. And I guess I'll start in about verse 3. Paul talks about the Macedonians, and he says, for they gave according to their means, as I can testify, and beyond their means, of their own accord, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. And this not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord, and then by the will of God to us. And so this is, whereas like, in 1 Corinthians, Paul said, hey, I've told the other churches to do this thing, you should do this as well. I'm not sure the Macedonians had that same commandment, but they heard about this, and they're like, yeah, we want to be a part of this. We're going to give and participate in it. And they basically begged to participate in this, and that was, it was something that cost them. They had to go beyond their means, it sounds like, but they were so excited to do this thing that this church was doing and participate in that. And so I think another example. And then the last one I have is Tabitha. And so she is, you can read about her in Acts chapter 9. Now let's go ahead and read this whole little section here, about six verses or so. Starting in verse 36, it says, now there was in Joppa a disciple named Tabitha, which translated means Dorcas. She was full of good works and acts of charity. In those days she became ill and died, and when they had washed her, they laid her in an upper room. Since Lydda was near Joppa, the disciples, hearing that Peter was there, sent two men to him, urging, please come to us without delay. So Peter rose and went with them. And when he arrived, they took him up to the upper room, and all the widows stood beside him, weeping and showing tunics and other garments that Dorcas had made while she was with them. But Peter put them all outside and knelt down and prayed. And turning to the body, he said, Tabitha, arise. And she opened her eyes, and when she saw Peter, she sat up. And he gave her his hand and raised her up. And then calling the saints and widows, he presented her alive. And it became known throughout all Joppa, and many believed in the Lord. So we often read this focusing on this the miracle that Peter did, raising this woman from the dead. And what a powerful sign that was to those in Joppa. And it says that many believed because of this event. But I think we can also see a lot in Tabitha, and that we don't really hear a lot about her. This is really the first we hear of her, and the main thing of note that she's done in this passage is died. And that's sort of what brings us to the story, is that now she's dead. But plenty of people die, and what stands out about Tabitha is all of her good works. She's known for her good works, her acts of charity, and they're like, this was an important person. This was a loss to us by having this person not able to do these good works for us anymore, and we need her back. And so they sent people to Peter. And, you know, to be honest, I'm not even sure if they were expecting him to raise her or what they were doing, but they knew they had lost something very dear in Tabitha because of the things that she had done. And the thing I really like is when Peter gets there and he goes up into the upper room, and they're showing, I imagine this room just sort of being, you know, like rolls of fabric everywhere and, you know, dresses and clothing and stuff all draped around there. They're seeing all of the good works that she had done, all of the things that she had made, and these things that she was, I imagine, planning to give to the poor or anyone who had need or whatever. And, you know, even just looking at her room, you could tell that she was busy. And it wasn't that she, you know, anyone told her to do this or that she had to do it. It was just that it was a work that she saw that she could do. It was skills that she had, and she decided to use them. And, you know, this isn't necessarily like preaching or sort of what we usually think of as like spiritual work, but it was still important. It was, you know, she was giving things to help take care of other people and making things for everyone. And that made an impact on with the people that she was associated with. And so I think that's an example that we should take. So having looked at all these, then I want to focus some on Westside. What can we do at Westside as far as having a mind to work? So I'm going to put up a couple of questions. And I just want to pause for a second. And, you know, over however period of time you've been here, what are some of the successes that we've had here? I'll just sort of let you consider those to yourself. Reflect on them. Okay, hopefully we got one or two out of that time. It's when I actually started doing this lesson, I sat down and I just sort of mentally went through every row in this congregation or in this building. Think of who usually sits there and what's some way that they've made an impact in my life in the last 6 years that I've been here. And it was really cool, actually. I would encourage you to go home and do this too, because it was actually really surprising to me how this worked out. I guess it shouldn't have been surprising. That's kind of a weird thing to say, but just everybody. I didn't have to think real long to think of some way that you've made an impact on me. And I was going to read off like my whole list, but I don't really want to embarrass everybody. I'm going to talk about maybe some general themes that I saw, and hopefully you'll remember doing some of these. One is new converts that we've seen, and just the growth that they've had. There's some who maybe came from tough backgrounds, or, you know, things where we think, oh, this is going to be really hard for them. I remember there was one person who was here, and I was talking with someone at another congregation who'd studied with this person before they became a Christian, and so watch out for this person. They've got a lot they're going to have to overcome, and he didn't sound real confident that this person was gonna make it. And it's really been awesome to see how this person has grown and the example. And it's just really amazing, you know, to see that. And seeing maybe some of the young people that have grown up here and become Christians, and seeing them overcome some of the fears that they have, and, you know, just striving to be better. And it's just, I guess, so when I see the progress that they're making, it's great. Seeing all the men here that are willing to help out with really everything, is whether it's preaching or the Lord's table or leading songs or teaching class, or, you know, there's not all that many of us here, and so we end up having to do this a lot. But I don't see people really complaining about that. I'm like, oh man, I got to get up there again and do this. Just like, this is work that needs done, and so we do it. Looking out for one another, and that's sort of vague. There's been lots of cases of, you know, someone takes a special interest in someone else, and it's really cool to see that, especially when they have some kind of hardship or trouble, or, you know, it's been great to see that happen, and, you know, just lots of little specific cases of that have been great. Even just showing up and getting a warm greeting, people that go around and say hi, make sure that you know, you feel welcome here, that's, you know, it makes a difference. It makes this place a better place to be. I think just about everyone has opened up their home to me or to the college kids or to the whole congregation, or, you know, and that makes a big impact. You know, that's what makes it feel like a vibrant and working congregation. Seeing our emphasis on benevolence and looking for ways even in overseas, like where, you know, there's some really serious needs over there and that are honestly quite easy for us to meet. I was amazed when Tenson was here talking about the drought in Zimbabwe and how $30 can feed a family of four for a month out there. It was like, wow, that's, you know, I didn't know about that. And having this global view of, you know, our brothers and sisters everywhere and the ways that we can help is really, it's great to look at it from that bigger perspective there. People have encouraged us as far as singing and learning new songs and trying to become better at the worship that we give God as far as our song service, and has been something I love to sing, and so I love learning new songs and I love getting better at it. You know, people just, I love that challenge of getting better, and, you know, we've had several people here that have helped to encourage that as well. The number of people who have made just sort of thoughtful comments in Bible class has been great. It's, you know, sometimes they're even just a simple thing, or even just asking a question and being like, hey, I didn't understand that, and being willing to do that is really cool. We've shared sort of our passions, not just, you know, and so not all of these things are really what I would say spiritual things, but, you know, I've seen movies that I probably never would have thought to see, or I've seen music that never would have thought to listen to before, and it's great that people are sharing these things with me, and, you know, just gives me a richer perspective on the world, and that helps out a lot. And doing these times of getting to know each other sort of helps us build the bonds that we need when we do have maybe a challenging thing, or have, you know, more, it opens up these doors to have more spiritual conversations as well. And so these have meant a lot to me. And then there's so much that goes on behind the scenes, even whoever vacuums the floors in here, it gets done. And that's not really a job that's you get thanks for, you know, it's, I think we all take turns on it, but it's, you know, it's nice to have the bathrooms clean and just all that. It's a thing that we don't really notice, but that happens. There've been, so many wives, husbands, parents, children, so many great examples here that I've seen. And, maybe someday we'll be able to emulate in my life. That's, it's been great seeing all of these things as well, the examples that everyone sets. And, you know, even just the last one I wrote down here is just showing up. You know, sometimes people say it's like, oh, like, I don't know why I bother coming. No one notices when I'm there. And I realize, like, a lot of times I do notice. I may not get to go talk to you and then say, like, hey, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you came and all that. But your presence is felt. It is noticed. You know, it's, and it means a lot to me when people are here. It's, you know, it helps. The next one I have is just like, what are some challenges? I'm not going to go through a big list of here. It's, I don't know, kind of mean. But I do think it's worth looking at and thinking about. And, you know, we have a lot going for this group, but there's a lot we can do too. And we should look for these things, and particularly look for ways that we can meet this need. You know, it's something I tell people a lot when they're like, oh, well, what about this thing or that thing or that thing? I'm like, well, find a way to help. Find, you know, and it may not be much that you can do, but I'm sure there's something you can do. And so maybe think about this and what we can do. And the last thing I have then is just, how can we have a mind to work? And, you know, I wish we could, I could like tell you all like, you know, your job is this and your job is this and your job is this. And I don't know that. I don't know you all well enough to do that. We have these kind of, I think that all of us are sort of in this unique position, whatever that is, with we all know different people, we all are in different jobs, we're all in different things. There's things that we can do that no one else can do. Sort of like Esther as the queen, she had access to the king that no one else had, and she was able to do things that no one else could do. And I think in our own little way, we have things like that, and those are the things we should look for. I wish I could tell you what those things were for you, but again, I don't know. But what I will do is leave you with some general principles that maybe will help, and hopefully in seeing these examples that we've talked about, be encouraged to do these things as well. So the first one I had up there is use your abundance and your need. If we go back to 2 Corinthians chapter 8, and this is right after Paul had just finished talking about the Macedonians and what a great example they were as far as their generosity and their giving. And then I'll read these few verses here. It says, I say this not as a command, but to prove by the earnestness of others that your love is also genuine. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, and though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you by his poverty might become rich. And in this matter, I give my judgment. This benefits you, who a year ago started not only to do this work, but also to desire it. So now finish doing it as well, so that your readiness in desiring it may be matched by your completing it out of what you have. For if the readiness is there, it is acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what he does not have. For I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but that as a matter of fairness, your abundance at the present time should supply their need, so that their abundance may supply your need, and there may be fairness. And as it is written, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack. There's the kind of the obvious side of that is your abundance. There's, you know, some of us have more than others, and I think if we look at it in different categories, some of us may have more of this category and less of this category, and more of this category and less of this other one. And look for ways that you have abundance and how you can share that with others. You know, if you have that, that's a thing that you can do. And I also said use your need. Sometimes just allowing somebody to do a kind thing for you is that is a good work, I think, as well. You know, we talk about leaders a lot, but you also need followers to go along with them. And in that same way, it's hard to be generous if no one's willing to admit their need. And so you can use both of these things together to help do the work that the congregation here has. I didn't say anything about the Matthew passage up there, but that's the parable of the talents. And just, you know, we're all given something and we're expected to use that. So we should use these things. This one here is that little things matter. And this is sort of what I was getting when I talk about even the people who are here that I may not talk to, it still means something to me that you're here. And that's, so the passage I have for that is Matthew chapter 25. So Jesus here is talking about the final judgment and you know what it's going to be like there. And then in verse 39 or 31 then of Matthew 5, he says, when the Son of Man comes in glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne before him, and it will be gathered to, or before him will be. I'm just going to start over. when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. Before him will be gathered all the nations, and he will separate from people one from another as a shepherd separates sheep from the goats. And he will place the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. And the king will say to those on his right, come, you are blessed, or you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. And then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? Or when did you see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brothers, you did it to me. And that's, you know, I think it would be easy if Jesus were here to be like, oh, we need to help him out. He needs a new cloak, or he needs this or that. But what Jesus is saying here is that if we do anyone, we're doing that for him. And so these little things that we can do matter and make a big difference, as we read in that passage. And then the last thing is growth takes everyone. So I won't reread Ephesians since Mike did a good job of reading that for us. But that one talks about the importance of the body and everyone working together and how the body, to grow the way the body should, needs the whole body to participate in that. There's all something that we can provide. We all have our own different strengths and talents, and that's something that we can do. And so we should be working together in this. We all need to be involved. The 1 Corinthians passage I have up there also is similar to this, and again talking about the body, and I'll turn over there and read at least some of it. So 1 Corinthians 12, and then towards the end here. I'll start in verse 27. It says, "Now you are the body of the Christ and individually members of it, and God has appointed in the church first apostles, second prophets, third teachers, and then miracles and gifts of healing, helping, administering, and various kinds of people. Are all apostles, are all prophets, are all teachers, do all work miracles, do all profess or possess gifts of healing, do all speak with miracles, do all interpret, but earnestly desire the higher gifts." So that's, again, everyone had different talents there. And but earlier on in here, he talks about the body. And so in verse 19, he says, "If all were a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor again to the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, the parts of the body that seem weaker are indispensable. And in those parts of the body that we think less honorable, we bestow greater honor, and our unpresentable parts are treated with greater modesty, which our more presentable parts do not require. But God has so composed the body, giving greater honor to the part that lacked it, that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another." And then it talks about how if one suffers, we all suffer. We work together on this, and that we all have, you know, and sort of metaphorically, we're all different parts, whether, you know, I can't tell you whether you're a foot or a lung or a tongue or eyes or head or any of these things. This is sort of something you've got to figure out, but there's all something that we can do, and we should find that. There's something that we uniquely can do. So I want to leave you with that. Westside has meant a lot to me over the last 6 years, and I think we've done a good job of exemplifying a lot of these things, of working and encouraging one another, and just doing lots of little things and that turn into something big together. And we should keep doing that. That's how we grow. That's how we bring more people to Christ, is by them being able to see us working and being active the way that God wants his church to be. We always offer an invitation, and this is, you know, Jesus has done so much for us as, you know, I think we're all aware of that here, that Jesus has given us forgiveness of sins and a hope of heaven with him, and that's just an incredible thing. And we would like to invite anyone who may not then be a Christian to become one this morning, to be baptized and to wash away your sins. And you know, if you're a Christian who's maybe been struggling, maybe you haven't been working as hard as you would like to be doing as a Christian and want to do better from now on, if there's anything we can do for you this morning, let's do so as we stand and sing this invitation song, number 672.